Gene, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. My good friend, the man that I respect more than anyone as it relates to his knowledge of Islam, IQ Al-Rasuli, is on the line with us. But before we go to IQ this morning, I do want to speak to Bentley. Bentley, the unfortunately, it was a short segment where you were able to bring up your question. And what I would like to do, because your position as someone who has learned for the first time that your religion is based upon myths, things that are not true, and you seem genuinely interested in determining whether or not what you're hearing here is true. And if that is the case, you seem like a very reasonable fellow, Bentley. If that's the case, what I would love for you to do is if you will call us in the second hour of the program, so at this time on Monday, which is when we'll do our next program together, if you'll call the same number at this same time on Monday, I'll devote the entire program to answering your questions about what's wrong with Christianity, why God is opposed to Christianity, and why God, whose name is Yahweh, wants you to participate in a covenant relationship with him and is offering that covenant to you based upon five terms and conditions. Is that of interest to you, Bentley?
Yes, I'm very interested.
Okay. Now, if you don't mind, today, I am going to have to say goodbye because I have a special guest calling in from London, and we're going to devote the second hour of our program on Friday for the foreseeable future to this is a very remarkable man, and so I hope you continue to listen to the program on your computer or on whatever station you may be listening to, because this man is extraordinary. He is the single most best informed, most articulate person, I think, in the world related to Islam. What IQ Al-Rasuli knows is something we all need to know, which is that Muhammad was a fraud, that Islam is a fraud, that Allah is a fraud, and that's important, because if Muslims come to know that Islam is untrue, that at least starts them in the journey away from this religion, which is so crippling to them. But it's also important for those of us who are not Muslims, because Islam is the most vicious religion ever conceived. It is the most vicious doctrine, the most oppressive doctrine ever perpetrated on humanity. And so by coming to understand what Islam actually is, we free our children and ourselves from the hell that it has unleashed on our world. That being the case, let me welcome IQ Al-Rasuli. Hello, IQ. How are you this morning? Well, this afternoon, in your case.
Yes, I'm doing very, very well. Thank you. Everything is okay so far.
Okay, well, welcome back. What I'd like to do is I'm going to share a quick story and get your comment on this story. This came out of Egypt yesterday. It reads that Egyptian blogger Albert Saber, who is the maintainer of the Egyptian Atheist Facebook page, has been sentenced to 3 years in prison under Egypt's blasphemy law for posting the trailer for the anti-Muslim film Innocence of Muslims. This film was widely blamed for Al-Qaeda's coordinated attack on U.S. embassies on September 11th of this year, which were meant to pressure the U.S. for the release of Omar Abdel Rahman, who was imprisoned in the U.S. for his role in the World Trade Center attack of 1993. Amnesty International calls the sentence an outrageous assault on freedom of expression. What's your response to what the Egyptian court did to on behalf of this man?
Well, the same response that Amnesty has said. People must understand, and under Islam, there is no such thing as freedom. If freedom stops to exist instantly, the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, and all those people like them who are actually the fundamentalist Muslims, they are the true believers, take over. They are worse than Nazi Germany. They are worse than the Communist Party. They are worse than anybody you can imagine, because the moment they take over, darkness falls. There is no exchange of opinions. There is no freedom of religion. There is no freedom of belief, no freedom of speech, no freedom of any kind.
So right, now I want to drill down on this a moment, if I could, with you, IQ. What you've said is absolutely true. And the proof of it is, examine the 50 Islamic countries today, the 50 countries where Muslims are the majority of the population. There is absolutely no freedom. Now, let's equate that for a moment to communist China and the USSR back during the Iron Curtain days. There was no freedom of expression, no freedom of anything, our choice, no free will in either of those societies. And it was because they knew that given a choice, people would choose not to be communist. And they also recognized that if there was freedom of speech, that people could rationally, intelligently dispute the claims of fellows like Mao, like Stalin, like Lenin. And therefore, there is no freedom of speech, and there is no freedom of movement or free will expression of any kind. Now, the same thing exists in Islam, and perhaps you can share with our listeners as to why Islam is so afraid of free expression.
Muhammad, when he started, spreading his message, he was confronted by men and women. By the way, the women before Islam in Arabia were not inferior to the men. They were very, very much equal to the men. It's only after Islam that the women became equal to domestic animals.
Right.
So they were questioning him. They were Judaized Arabs. That means Arabs, original, aboriginal Arabs of the desert, who willingly converted to the religion of Christians or the religion of the Jews. They were native people who were questioning him because he was claiming left, right, and center quotations from the Bible, which contradict the Bible in every way.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he do? Besides slaughtering the people who questioned him, he made a prohibition in the Quran not to be questioned. The Quran is not to be questioned by any follower of Muhammad for eternity.
Correct.
So the Muhammadan Muslims, the followers of Muhammad, the so-called Muslims, are completely at a loss when they read the Quran. First, they are not allowed to read the Bible. And even if they read the Bible, their mind will not accept that the Bible is right and the Quran is wrong. So it's a dichotomy. They are stuck in a warped mind whereby they will never know the truth.
As a matter of fact, in
the Imam.
Yeah, in fact,
because
in the Fifth Surah.
You must not question. So what do we have? We have 50, as you said, Islamic states. They are the least productive, least inventive, least creative in human history. 1,500 million followers of Muhammad. Can
right,
I prove
because
my point?
Without free will, without free expression, there is no opportunity for creativity. There's actually not even an opportunity for love. Love becomes impossible. Creativity becomes impossible. Invention becomes impossible. There is no prosperity. There is no morality. There is no civility. The moment you remove free will and then upend conscience, these things all disappear from those societies, which is why the Islamic countries are literally hell on earth. The reason that I think Muhammad chose place in his Quran this prohibition against free speech and freedom of religion. The Quran says that Muslims have no choice in their religion because it has been chosen for them by Allah. And the Quran says that Muslims must not question the Quran because those who question it lose their faith. It is for that exact reason that the moment you begin to do what you dared to do, IQ, which is to question whether or not the claims, which seem so stupid in Islam, are true, the moment you do that and you consider evidence and you evaluate that evidence reasonably, what you find is it is impossible to be an informed and rational Muslim. And And so recognizing that, there is a prohibition against criticism. But there's a second aspect to it, too, and I'd like you to speak to both of these, too. The second is that Muhammad claims to be Allah's lone witness, his lone prophet, the example that all Muslims should follow. And yet, the actual life of Muhammad, as it's recorded in the Hadith, is despicable. He was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was a mass murderer. He was an avowed liar. He lived amongst the most repulsive lives in human history. And so when you actually reveal who he was and what he did, you'd be repulsed by his religion. Is that not true?
Absolutely true. But the tragedy of Muslims, as we have just said, and I will make another assertion. No believing Muhammadan Muslim, no true believing Muslim can possibly have two brain cells of logic. The moment they have two brain cells of logic, they apostatize. It sounds outrageous, but it isn't outrageous. I debate with Muslims, you know, on a one-to-one basis. I show them the facts.
Right.
I show them the contradictions in the Quran. I show them the errors in the Quran, grammatical, lexical, historical.
Right.
They completely deny it. They say, no, the Quran is true. The Bible of the Jews has been corrupted by the Jews, and the Bible of the Christians has been corrupted by the Christians. So you cannot talk to a Muhammadan Muslim. You cannot debate with them. You cannot change their mind. They are stuck in the time warp of Muhammad's 7th century Arabia forever.
Yeah, that's
true. That's the tragedy.
Yeah, and what's so amazing here is, for example, the Quran claims to be in pure Arabic. And yet, almost every important word in the Quran is Hebrew, including the word Quran. It's a Hebrew word. Almost every important word in the Quran is Hebrew. The Quran claims that it confirms the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, particularly the Torah. And yet, the Quran is the opposite of the Torah. It's its absolute antithesis. And so if you know what the Torah says, and you know what the Quran says, since the Quran claims that it confirms the Torah, you instantly know that the Quran from beginning to end is a complete lie. Even that argument, IQ, that Muslims so often raise, which is that the Jews corrupted the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, it isn't historically valid. And when we return to Shattering Myths after the break, we'll talk a little bit about the textual history of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and the textual history of the Quran to reveal that the opposite of the Islamic claim is actually true. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths with IQ, Al Rizzo. To Shattering Myths, I am your host, Yada. We have as our special guest, IQ Al Rizzouli. You can reach IQ at alrizzouli.com. Al Rizzouli, R-A-S-S-O-O-L-E-L-I, I should say, .com. His book, published in three parts, is called Lifting the Veil. The easiest way, actually, to find it is to Google Lifting the Veil IQ, and it will take you right to the works of IQ Al Rizzouli. I have a copy of the first volume, and enjoy it. I would recommend it to you. What I wanted to share, IQ, is the, and I'm sure you have shared this also with Muslims with whom you debate when they claim that the Jews corrupted their Torah, so that's the reason why it no longer coincides with the story of the Quran. But the corruption of the Torah, for it to be confirmed in the Quran, would have to be so massive that 99% of what we read in the Torah would have had to have been different when it was originally revealed to Moshe. And what we find is that going 500 to 800 years before Islam was even conceived, that there are hundreds upon hundreds of manuscripts found in the caves surrounding Qumran, called the Dead Sea Scrolls, that confirm that the copy edits that Jews did to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms were extraordinarily minute. And so, rather than evidence, historical evidence, that the Torah, prophets, and Psalms have been corrupted, we have absolute corroboration that they have not been. And the Quran actually, and Muhammad actually make the claim that the Jews began to corrupt their scriptures to discredit Islam, and so they did it after the 5th or 6th, 7th century CE, which of course is impossible because by that time there are tens of thousands of manuscripts that prove that it did not occur. But that's evidence and reason, is it not? And how effective is evidence and reason on the Muslim mindset?
I use a different tactic. I ask them a very simple question. The Bible could have only been corrected under two circumstances, either before the Quran was revealed or after the Quran was revealed. It can't be anything else.
Right.
Now, it couldn't have been corrupted before the Quran, because Muhammad uses these same books as witness to the veracity of his Quran.
Correct.
So that eliminates any corruption before the Quran. Now I ask the same question. Okay, so the corruption occurred after the Quran. So I ask them to show me one single book which is uncorrupted, upon which they use their own, you know, points of view. They have to have the uncorrupted version for them to know what is corrupted. Guess what the answer is? We don't have one.
Yeah, well, yeah, think
but
about this for a moment.
If you don't have one, then how in heaven's name are you saying that what you are talking about is true?
Yeah. No, what I point out is that this notion that it was corrupted after the Quran, which is what Muhammad states. He is so egocentric that he claims that the Jews specifically changed their Torah and their prophets after Muhammad revealed the Quran to discredit the Quran. That's Muhammad's claim. And for that to be true, what you would have to do is you would have to go back and you would have to have somebody unearth the tens of thousands of manuscripts of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms and change them all. Somebody would have to go find where all of them are, and somebody would have to change them all without leaving any evidence that they made those changes, because they all agree and they all disagree with the Quran. And there isn't a single evidence anywhere in the world that this took place. 100% of the evidence supports the fact. And the fact is that the story that Yahweh tells in his Torah is the exact opposite of the story that Allah allegedly conveys in his Quran. And you begin right with Yahweh's single most important statement. My name is Yahweh. That is my only name. A god by any other name is a false god. What room does that leave for Allah?
Zero. But we're
right.
Talking about people with intelligence. Sorry, not intelligence, with logic.
Yes, that's
thing,
true.
By the way, when we speak about Palestine, they speak right. About the Palestine and Palestinian people. I have $100,000 challenge to any human being who can show us the word Palestine as a state and Palestinian people as a people mentioned anywhere in recorded human history. That doesn't exist.
Yeah, we're going to have fun with that when we return to Shattering Myths. And that is, by the way, one of the greatest myths of humankind and one that will have the greatest influence over the next 15 to 20 years. I love IQ Rosoli as a guest. We'll be back in a moment. Back to Shattering Myths. We have IQ Al Rasuli here. For those who would like to get the full double barrels of IQ, there are three volumes of his book, which is called Lifting the Veil, which I would encourage you to purchase. It's called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. You can find it at authorhouse.com or at amazon.com, either of those places. And you can read the insights of IQ also at Al Rasuli.com. There's a lot to the myth of the so-called Palestinians. And there's nothing that I would rather do than devote considerable time to this, because it's going to be the catalyst for World War III. And to understand this myth is to understand not only current events, but past and future history, IQ. But let's start right at the beginning. We know that Muhammad spoke what's called the Satanic Verses, where Muhammad, while he was still in Mecca, made statements that spoke on behalf of the pagan gods and goddesses that were worshipped in the Kaaba, and that he became a laughingstock after the Satanic Verses, where he said that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan, and that in the midst of that, he had this dream where he dreamt that he got on a winged ass and he rode the winged ass to Jerusalem, where he met in the temple with all the bigwigs of the Torah prophets and Psalms. And, of course, there was no temple then, but he didn't know that. The temple had been destroyed in 70 CE. And then from there, that's why they have the Dome of the Hoofy Print, the Dome of the Rock, is that he leapt up to heaven by way of hell to meet with Allah. And so because of that story, which is obviously false, Muslims claim Jerusalem and Israel. Is that a reasonable summary of the basis?
Yes, but the Satanic Verses were much more important than what you just said. I'll tell you why. The goddesses that he was talking about were the three daughters of Allah. People don't understand because people don't know. Allah is not the same as the God of Jesus, Moses, and Abraham, because Allah was the name and only the name of the supreme rock god of 360 gods and goddesses in stone of pagan Arabia.
Correct.
Allah of pagan Arabia, in the pantheon and the religion of the pagan Arabs, had three daughters, Al-Lat, Al-Uzza, and Manat. Al-Lat was represented, by the way, by the crescent moon. Al-Uzza, which was Venus, is represented by a star. This is why, even after paganism was supposed to have been destroyed, every mosque and many of the flags of the Muslims have the crescent and the star, and they don't even know that they represent the daughters of Allah. Can you believe that? But this is true.
Well, of course, I've
1,500 million Muslims do not know,
yeah,
that the crescent and the star on top of their mosques are symbols of paganism representing the daughters of Allah.
Yes. And the reason that this the Satanic Verses occurred is that, as you have determined, Muhammad made up almost all of the Quran's Meccan surahs solely to satiate his own personal lust for sex, power, and money. And the Meccans, who knew him better than anyone today, recognized that he was a complete fraud. And so they went to Muhammad, who was being disruptive in their mud hut village, and said to Muhammad that, since what you want is sex, power, and money, we'll make you, king for a day, we'll give you some money, and we'll send the prettiest girls in our community over to you, so long as you begin to incorporate our traditions along with your new religion. So Muhammad came out, and he spoke on behalf of some of these rock gods, the daughters of Allah, that were supposedly part of the Arabian pantheon as displayed in the Kaaba. And that became what was known as the Satanic Verses, because some of Muhammad's followers at the time said, hey, wait a minute, Muhammad, you've been telling us that you have a monotheistic religion, and a god and four goddesses is not monotheistic, so what's the deal here? And so Muhammad, to keep from losing his handful of followers, then said, hey, Satan inspired that, and Satan inspires all of Allah's messengers, and therefore he blamed Satan for the admission that these little girls were goddesses that served as intermediaries to Allah.
Absolutely true. But he blamed, he all, always blame somebody else. Every narcissist.
Of course.
Must blame somebody else because a narcissist is blameless. A narcissist is a perfect human being.
Yes.
That's the way they look at themselves. Everybody else is inferior. They are the most superior. They don't make mistakes.
Yeah, let me give you a let me give you a great example of that. I mean, just a great example of that. Muhammad was given Abu Bakr's daughter when she was 6 years old to be his sex toy. Muhammad at the time was 50 years old. And so when Muhammad in the hadith blamed Allah for what he knew was wrong, it's pedophilia, he knew that 50-year-olds don't have sex with 6-year-old girls. So he blamed Allah. He said that Allah gave Aisha to him, and therefore, it's don't blame him. Allah made him do it.
Absolutely true. Allah always made him do it because he was Allah. Every single verse in the Quran that speaks about Allah is Muhammad. Because every letter, every word, every verse, ayah, and every chapter, surah in the Quran were never revealed by to Muhammad by any god called Allah or any messenger called Gabriel. They are all the products of Muhammad's warped mind, his alter ego, his autobiography, but very cleverly projected into the unsuspecting mouths of Allah and Gabriel to give them the aura of sanctity and divinity. Allah,
yeah, and
Muhammad,
we agree.
And Satan are one and the same.
Yeah, we agree mostly on this, but not completely, but mostly. And I would say that we agree even more when I explain the minor disagreement that we would have here, because you'll probably embrace this as well. I don't think Muhammad was all that smart. And so while the Quran is stupid, to be sure, there are elements of the Quran which give the Quran some credibility. For example, some of the earliest Meccan surahs sound, have a kind of a nice jingle to them, but they were plagiarized from Hanif's down there in Yemen. And then once Muhammad got his stride, he did move away from them, and then you have the never-ending argument between him and the Meccans. But then what happens is that the Quran takes on a kind of a religious veil in Yathrib, today's Medina, because Muhammad in the Quran claims that the Jews there, the rabbis, sold him stories, which he then twisted to serve his interests. So this affinity with actually the Talmud as opposed to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is because Muhammad actually heard these Talmud stories from rabbis. Some of the stories are absolutely just incorporated directly from the Talmud without any twisting, just plagiarized. But some of them are twisted and plagiarized by Muhammad to serve his agenda. So I think he had some inspiration in that regard from the people in his community. And the second place we might disagree slightly is that Islam is so overtly demonic. Allah in the Quran is presented exactly as Satan is presented in the Torah and in the prophets. And as such, I do think that there was some modicum of inspiration that would have been the demonic that has served the adversary well. But that being the case, 90% of what you find in the Quran is nothing more than the twisted testimony, the autobiography of an extraordinarily perverted individual, Muhammad.
Absolutely. I mean, really, I've studied many human beings, the history of the lives of many human beings.
You know, the Quran always speaks of God in the plural, we. And it says, you know, we did this, we did that. And the reason it's we is it's Muhammad and his alter ego. That,
correct.
That Allah and Muhammad are a union, if you will. And so when he talks about we, the we is Muhammad and Allah.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
And it constantly tells people to follow our orders. And our orders are Muhammad's orders and Allah's orders, because Allah and Muhammad are the same.
In the hadith, chapter after chapter after chapter in the hadith, when Muhammad tells or asks his followers, what do you think of this? They tell him, you and Allah know best. Allah and Muhammad. Muhammad was twinned in the minds of his followers. Twinned. Like inseparable creatures. Because they were inseparable. Because Muhammad and Allah are the same. They're one and the same. Even in their mosques. You look at the calligraphy of the name Allah and the calligraphy of Allah, of Muhammad, the same size and the same height. Now, how is it possible they put the same size and the same height for a god and for a messenger at the same time? They are the same.
And why?
Nothing has changed.
Why would the God of Islam mirror the same qualities, have the same character as this Arabian man? You know, if you look at Allah, Allah says I'm a terrorist. Muhammad was a terrorist. Allah says that I disavow my oaths. Muhammad was a liar. Muhammad is a mass murderer. Allah claims to be a mass murderer. Everything that you look about that are flaws in Muhammad's character are also revealed in Allah's character. They're the same character.
Because they're the same person.
Yes. Yes.
As I said, the only reason he puts Allah and Gabriel is to give more authenticity, more divine revelation-like background. But otherwise, nothing was revealed to him.
You know, with Yahweh, Yahweh has a test.
Every single verse was revealed to him, made to order. It's a made to order revelation.
Situational scriptures.
When
Yahweh provided. A test is found in Devarim, which is the fifth book of the Torah, which means teaching and guidance. When Yahweh revealed a test for how we would know those things that he inspired and those things that are from the lips of false prophets, he impugned Muhammad. And we're going to speak about that in a moment and determine whether or not Muhammad was actually a prophet. Segment of Shattering Myths for today. We have as our guest a gentleman that I hope will return again next Friday and many Fridays thereafter so that we can continue to expose and condemn the myths that are Islam. IQ, what we were talking about is the fact that there are no such thing as a Palestinian people. There is no such thing as Palestine. And I went back and spoke of the satanic verses and the wild ass ride to Jerusalem to begin to speak about the origins of this Islamic fixation on this place. But you are, I'm sure, fully aware that the Romans renamed the province of Judea, Philistina, in 135 CE, after a long extinct people, that there were a people once upon a time called the Philistines, and they lived in a place called Philistia. But the Babylonians and Assyrians came in and conquered them and wiped out every single one of them 2,600 years ago. So there hasn't been a Palestinian or a place called Philistia for 2,600 years. And therefore, to say there's a Palestinian people and a homeland called Palestine is nothing but a marketing myth. It was a myth that was promoted by the Romans, and the Romans did it only because of the 133 through 35 uprising against them.
The reason they used Philistine or Philistia, because the Roman Emperor Hadrian, who was cognizant of the Hebrew Bible, he knew that the worst enemy of Israel were the Philistines.
Correct.
So to spite the Jews,
correct,
he renamed their land in the name of their worst enemy.
That's correct.
It wasn't done arbitrarily. It was done with a forethought, with malice.
That's correct.
With a forethought.
Correct. Right. And
so
it's
when
a
the Arabs
complete
speak,
myth.
The Palestinians, the only time they ever knew about Palestine or the Philistines is from the Bible.
Correct.
Nowhere in the history of the Arabs will anybody find a single reference to Judea or to Israel or to Palestine or to Philistia. They don't exist in the Arabic language. They didn't exist until Muhammad
the myth of Palestine. Right. The myth of a place called Palestine and a Palestinian people began in 1964. Now, why IQ did Muslims begin to promote this myth that there were so-called Palestinian people and a Palestinian homeland from which they had been displaced? Why was that myth conceived?
It was a very ingenious myth.
Yes,
because
it was.
By creating a people with a state, then the Jews actually become aggressors.
Correct.
They took a land from a people called Palestinian. While the whole world cannot find the word Palestine in any of the League of Nations resolutions, or in the United Nations resolutions, even in 242, after the 1967 war.
Right.
There is Arab refugees, always Arab refugees. UNRWA is Arab refugees, never Palestinian refugees. Not once.
But the myth is extraordinarily ingenious, because if you can convince the people to believe the lie that there are so-called Palestinian people who have been deprived of their homeland by those terrible Jews, and their homeland is called Palestine, then the myth becomes very popular, and sympathetic people say, well, these poor Palestinian people, they deserve their homeland, which is Palestine, but it's nothing but a lie.
Correct, but do you know who is more guilty than the Muslims and the Arabs? The West.
Yes,
the West,
of course,
is more guilty than the Arabs, because they perpetuate the lie.
Correct.
Full well, it's a lie.
Right.
I asked once in a debate, when Jesus was crucified in Jerusalem, how many Palestinians were around? I asked a simple question.
Right. 600 years early, the last Philistine had been murdered by the Babylonians and Assyrians, and that was the answer. Of course, there is no Jesus.
Yeah, but this is, you know, even today, the United Nations, the Europeans, and the Americans speak about Palestinian people, a two-state solution. Two-state solution? There was a two-state solution in 1947.
Yes, there was.
The Jews accepted it. The Arabs did not. They wanted to exterminate the Jews. They lost the war.
And every war thereafter. IQ, it's my pleasure to have you as a guest. I hope you'll join us this time next Friday.
Thank you.
No one is more articulate on this, the most important subject of our day. May God bless you all.
Bye.
Howdy folks, Pharmacist Ben here, nutritional pharmacist and skincare chemist. If you've heard me on my daily health and wellness program, The Bright Side, you know I'm on a mission to spread the good news about the power of